Hello and welcome back to the Bropolis podcast. As usual, I am joined with Nathan and the run continues. There's every reason to be happy. The summer weather is finally, judging by outside, actually it's going a little bit grey to be honest. I may have spoken a little bit too soon. I was about to say the summer weather's finally making a breakthrough, but it's really not actually. There's quite a strong wind in all honesty. Yeah, I'm 43 seconds into the beginning of the podcast and I've spoken about the wind and the weather. This is a Middlesbrough football podcast. So Nathan, how are you first of all?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Thanks for asking. Yeah, the Borough big red machine just keeps rolling on, doesn't it? It feels like, well, ages away since we spoke about a Borough defeat, which was that Stoke harrowing afternoon in which we discussed Borough being dragged ever closer to the drop zone, and now we look incredibly stupid as Michael Carrick's Middlesbrough side go seven games unbeaten in the Championship and over the last six games are top of the form guide. So yeah, it's one of them where you just can't help but smile in sort of being proved wrong a little bit after that afternoon at Stoke. But yeah, it was a funny old afternoon yesterday, but just keep on grinding the wins out, don't we?
Yeah, we certainly do. And I mean, there's almost a reason to be a little bit disheartened because it's just a little bit typical, Borough, that this run of form's come at a time where the playoffs felt out of reach, really. And I mean, I think going into yesterday, everyone looked at the fixtures before any games had kicked off and thought, well, if we are going to make that late charge and have a late little sneak in there, then results yesterday are going to have to, you know, fall in our way a little bit and we've still got to get the job done. The way that I thought it would turn out would be that Ipswich would beat Norwich, Coventry would get beat off Leeds, and then we'd get beat off Swansea. However, it turns out that everyone just won. Everyone just won. The relentless nature of the race for the playoffs. I can't believe I'm even saying that, really. I mean, Sky Sports, I don't know if you've seen, last week they decided that we might actually be part of it because we just so happen to have a game coming up against Leeds on Sky. Yesterday, they did a probabilities of who could make the playoffs as part of the coverage for Ipswich versus Norwich. We weren't part of that. So, I mean, we kind of decided last week that realistically it's not going to be on the cards, and Sky Sports have made their minds up now as well. So yeah, I mean, it was always going to be difficult, as we said last week, virtually impossible. But then when the results went the way they did, I should say, you kind of just felt like it's going to take a bit of a shine off any result that we can manage to get. But actually, there was still a whole load of reason to be positive and smile about yesterday's result, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. It's been probably a little bit of a while, really, where I can think of a game like yesterday where both teams were definitely not at their best, and yet Middlesbrough come out on top with quality from the front man. It feels like we've never really had that, where we have a lad up front that can just sort of be the difference in those games, where yesterday it felt like a nothing game, really, again for the second time in a week at the Riverside, with a team coming here that had something to play for on Monday, and then obviously Swansea coming yesterday, as we mentioned in the preview of this game, that don't really have a whole lot to play for. So it just felt like a sort of end of season game that was just sort of waiting for the season to peter out. And yeah, I mean, they didn't offer pretty much anything in the game, but yeah, we had a couple of chances in the opening stages, didn't really come all too close to threatening. Latte laughed at a header that he nodded wide. But then the goal in the first half pretty much summed the first half up in terms of it p-rolling in the corner. But once you sort of look at the replay and see that Latilath's nutmegged, I think it was Fulton, and then is crowded out by probably three or four bodies and reverses that shot into pretty much the only place in the goal that he can find. He does really well, I suppose, to do that. But yeah, sometimes those ones are just helpful. The scuffed finish probably caught the keeper out a little bit. Obviously caught him unsighted, and yeah, just nestles in off the post. And it did feel yesterday similar to Monday, really. If you got the first goal, you probably win the game, and that was exactly how yesterday went. Swansea offered nothing before the goal, offered little after the goal, and yeah, a very, very, very comfortable afternoon once again for Boro at the Riverside.
Yeah, like you say, it was an interesting one with the finish because I think Mark Jury after the game said, "Oh, it was a little bit fortuitous, you know, he sort of scuffs it and it rolls into the corner." And Carrick was quite quick to sort of say, "Well, those are the type of goals that strikers live off. Those are the ones where, you know, you pay the money for because he finds really the only place in the goal or the only place in between a few bodies, as you say, where he can possibly put that football and it'll result in it going into the back of the net." And yeah, I think the majority of this podcast is just going to be the Latilath podcast, to be honest, because there's so much to praise about his performance yesterday. But as you say, it was a real, without sounding negative, a real non-event of a game. And actually, there's been a few accusations of sort of bitterness towards Swansea's manager yesterday. Luke Williams come out and said it felt like a bit of a pre-season friendly and that the atmosphere wasn't great. I don't necessarily agree with all of his statements, but I can kind of see where he's coming from. I think there's probably a little bit of bitterness there because of the fact his team just didn't show up at all. But as you said, they literally have nothing to play for. They're not in any danger, realistically, of going down. And they're certainly not going to make a late dash to try and get in the playoffs. But as you say, the atmosphere was interesting, largely because of the only chant throughout the afternoon being Latilath's new chant. I must say, that's absolutely fine with me because it's probably one of my favourite chants in a while. And I mean, we had a few really good ones last season, didn't we? But yeah, that chant was in full sort of force, full voice from the South Stand especially. And it was deservingly so for the performance that the man in the chant, Latilath, put on yesterday for us. I guess just in terms of the wider sort of look of things, nice to see Hayden Hackney and Rav Vandenberg back on the bench yesterday. Obviously, we've seen this a couple of times where Michael Carrick will put players back on the bench and then after the game say, "Oh, well, I had no intention of ever actually putting them on, but I just wanted them to be involved." I mean, it would have been interesting if we'd had a defensive injury or a midfield injury and to see if Carrick may well have been forced into making that substitution. But yeah, I mean, good to see them just back involved, I guess. And, you know, it's sort of a difficult podcast, a difficult situation to be in because there's all the reason to be positive. But then those results, as I said earlier in the podcast yesterday, from the teams in and around us, just sort of put you back down to earth a little bit where you don't want to get too excited. But you know, we're 7 games unbeaten now, 5 clean sheets in the last 6, 2 draws out of those 7 games, and obviously 5 wins. And you kind of think, well, how long can this go on for without us really starting to put a little bit of pressure on Norwich? But you know, it is a weird one because we're positive, there's reason to be positive, but yet, you know, we there's not really a huge deal to get overly excited about, and that's what it's all about, really. I want to get overly excited and overly optimistic and think we've got a chance, but that 6-point gap just isn't loosening at all, is it really?
No, it's not. And you look at sort of yesterday's games, as you mentioned, and you see Norwich at home to Ipswich in their little derby that they have going on that really not a lot of people care about. And yeah, Ipswich going really well. You think, yeah, this one will probably be close. Ipswich, from what I watched, didn't turn up really. Didn't look like the Ipswich that we've seen all season, and didn't have 25 minutes stoppage time at the end of the game to salvage something. Leeds going away to Coventry, you think, oh, again, a side right up there at the top of the league, trying going away to a playoff chasing side. Yes, as we know, it's no easy feat going away to the CBS, as we get beat there every single season without fail. But yeah, Leeds don't get anything there. And then obviously you see Hull just behind us go away to Cardiff and win that one 3-1 with relative ease, and you think, well, yeah, I suppose that ain't the greatest set of results that you possibly could have wished for. But at the same time, I'm not gonna kid anyone on here. I've said it for months when we've been sort of teased with this, a couple of points off the playoffs. We're not good enough for the playoffs this season. And if we did, by some miracle, get in there, as me and you spoke about yesterday, Chris, we'd probably get mullered in the playoffs by whoever it was in there that we play. It'd be the team that finishes third place. I suppose with that, yes, they are technically a better team than you, but because of the way that this has gone this season, with it going right to the wire for automatic promotion, maybe they feel deflated in the playoffs and just can't pick themselves up for those games. So
Well,
that could be.
you saw it with Brighton when we beat them on the last day. They went
Yeah.
out of Sheffield Wednesday, even the semi-finals. They didn't even make the final, did they? I mean, mentally, as you say, and we saw it even last season with us. We pushed and pushed and pushed. Sheffield United had one slip up. They obviously sealed the deal. And really, you could look back at us and say, we sort of just ran out of steam. And I think there's a big mental side of it there. So, yeah, I mean, it's difficult because, as you say, if we did make it in there, I'm not saying that I think we will still, but if we did, you'd be hoping that that would pay a factor. And to be honest, it's more frustrating that I look at that Norwich team and I just really, I guess it's the bias of, we spoke about this a few podcasts ago where I said, you know, there's just so many teams in this division where I just think they're just not very good, but we probably fall into that category with everyone else's fans because we're that inconsistent and we've been largely not fantastic for the majority of the season. So yeah, it's a really, really tricky one, I think, because we're doing everything that we've asked of this team after the Stoke game. Try and end the season with as much momentum as possible, take it into next season. You know, for the players that are trying to earn contracts or earn a permanent move, the likes of Ayling, the likes of Greenwood, you know, try and prove yourself. I'm sure decisions have probably already been made, but you know, really put everything on the line and try and make your mark, I guess. And for the most part, they are all doing what they can at the moment, but obviously it doesn't really change the picture of the table. And I think that's, yeah, I think usually I wouldn't sort of be in this kind of mood after seven games unbeaten, but it's still just a bit, come on, Norwich, just give us a bit of false hope at least.
Yeah, it's one of them where you do ideally want them to slip up. You sent me on Twitter last night their last five games, and it's been mentioned for a good couple of weeks now that they've got the most favourable sort of run in till the end of the season to try and get into the playoffs. Yes, they probably will do it now. The gap is in their favour, and yeah, momentum's in their favour as well. They're going to bounce into that next game, you'd think, after just beating Ipswich once again. And Yeah, my hope for the rest of the season is that we just continue the momentum. We continue to see the levels of our players and the performances just keep on increasing, 100% effort, as we have been seeing for the last couple of weeks. And yeah, just build some real momentum going into next season. And ideally, then we won't start the season in November and give everyone 3 months head start. And yeah, we'll see where it takes us. But look, we've got some players in this side currently that are sort of playing out of the skin, I suppose, picking up some real good form. Matt Clark, brilliant at the back once again, just no nonsense centre half, nothing gets past him. Part of a defence that's kept 5 clean sheets in 6 games, ever present in the last, oh, sorry, in this run. Johnny Howson alongside him just looks too easy for him to play as a centre half. He's just too wise and intelligent to play there. His footballing brain just allows
He's
him to.
almost one step ahead of everything, isn't
Yeah,
he?
the ball's getting played in the centre forwards and he's in front of the centre forward already, getting the ball and playing forward. He's just top class. And obviously the main one that's catching everyone's eye, and rightly so, is Emmanuel Latalath. 2 goals yesterday. I suppose
Let's
you.
talk about his second, first of all, because it's. Do you know what? We spoke about comparisons with Darwin Núñez last week. And the fact that, you know, when he has less time to think about it, he's a better player. And I guess in some ways it is a little bit instinctive, the fact that it's just that, I guess, two actions of chop inside, get your shot off. But I mean, the execution is just phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I'm going to be honest, when Finazaz collects the ball and plays him in, I didn't feel too confident because it was one of them where he's sort of running one on one against the defender. You expect him to be able to either knock it past or beat the defender, but you're always worried about that finish. But with this one, as mentioned, it was quite sort of similar to that Cardiff goal that he scored earlier on in the season, where he chops inside with his left foot and yeah, just sort of bends it into the corner with his right. And yeah, I mean, it's a great finish. It'll only improve his confidence, which should already be sky high the way he's been performing in the last couple of games. And yeah, reading Carrick's comments following the game, he spoke about Laelath's composure being good. Now, I mean, I'm not so sure. I suppose he watches him every day in training, but having watched him all season, I'm not entirely sure that composure is his strong point. But in this instance, it certainly was. He steadied himself after chopping inside, and he bends that finish perfectly. Beyond Rushworth, secures the 3 points, is second of the game. And yeah, really nice finish. You're just hoping that he can continue the momentum for the rest of the season. Keeps building up that goals tally, 12 for the season now, which is really, really promising, I suppose, considering how the season has gone in terms of injuries for him personally, moving into a new country, a new culture. And yeah, sort of getting to grips with the language, the way he wants to play, injuries hampering his season, injuries hampering the team's season. And yeah, 12 goals so far with the season still a month away from finishing is really promising. Hopefully he gets to 15. That'd be very nice, wouldn't it?
I mean, at the current rate he's going at, you wouldn't bet against him going and getting 20 from now until the end of the season. Now, I think that might be a little bit of a tough ask, but I've been, in all seriousness, we spoke about him an awful lot last podcast, and you know we're only going to speak about him even more this podcast because of his two goals. I mean, I think today I saw a stat where, you know, I'm for the most part I'm not a huge fan of these apps and sort of statistical ratings of player performances, because I think sometimes it is a little bit sort of falsified and misguided, where you see, well, they've completed 100% of passes, but they've only passed it back and forth to their midfield partner and back to the centre half. And therefore, they've got a 7.8 or something like that. But I think Laty Laff has got maybe it's like the sixth best individual rating in terms of a performance in the championship this season. And I mean, yesterday, as you say, it's not often, at least, well, I mean, it's quite ironic because I say not often, but last season, more often than not, our attacking players were winning us games. But for the most part, as a Middlesbrough fan, you don't usually see your attacker or your striker being the difference maker. And yesterday, he was that. There was some good performances, but Laty Laff was exactly that. And it's not just his two goals, it's his constant threat with his pace, it's his chasing, it's his harrying. It's his ability to absolutely leap into the air. We joked last week about Rodrigo Muniz, and when he was on loan, at least initially when he was getting games under Chris Wilder, we said what a leap he had on him. I think Laty Laff gives a real close bit of competition to Muniz for his sort of standing jump, because he's not huge, but he's got an absolute sort of standing high jump. I'd love to see stats, because he's got to be right up there in the squad for best result. But in all seriousness, it is just, I think, as you say, when you factor in the injuries that he suffered with his first season in English football in a difficult league, I think we were so sort of lucky last season with two attackers going into the back end of last season that were just in absolute red hot form that we were almost sort of spoilt for choice, I guess, with having two of the best attackers in terms of form wise going into the back end of last season than we've seen in years as a Middlesbrough fan. And I think that's somewhat meant that Laty Laff's first season has gone a little bit underrated. Obviously now the hype and the expectation will start to build because he's producing these moments on a little bit more of a consistent basis. But again, you've got to look at the recruitment and say, you know, at certain points this season, the jury was firmly out on him. He didn't look confident. He didn't look convincing in front of goal. I don't think, as you say, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, I'd still describe him as, you know, confident in front of goal or composed. But yet, he's scoring goals and he's in great form. So it's only right, really, that people's eyes are already looking to next season and thinking, well, if he stays fit for one full year, what kind of numbers might he put up in a team that hopefully will be improved with added quality in and around him as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really hoping that you get a full season out of him next season. If he's the man to lead the line, which, look, I'm not entirely set in stone in my opinion if he's going to be the main guy next year. But if he is, you'd ideally want a injury-free season from him where he's not missing for, I mean, he's been missing for a month and then 2 months. So a good portion of the season there with injuries. So yeah, it'd be nice to have a fully fit Laty Laff available all season round. That'd be ideal, even if you're using him, as mentioned, as the second striker in the squad to bring him off the bench against some of the back lines in this division that are just worn out after 60 minutes up against a number nine. It'll be horrible, and I'd hate to be an opposition defender, if I'm honest, if you look to the bench and see him coming on. But yeah, 12 goals for the season so far. Let's hope he can kick on till the end of the season. And as mentioned in the last couple of podcasts, let's just shit on other team seasons now. I'm desperate for it, and now we're getting to that point where it's the sort of the difficult run of fixtures now where we've got past the Swansea game where they don't have anything to play for and we've just dispatched them as easy as you like. And we've got some difficult games coming up with teams that will be feeling the pressure, have got things to play for. And look, this weekend we've seen it with two of the teams that are coming up in our next three up the top of the division that have both fallen foul to teams in similar positions to where we are. So let's just bring it on and let's get right into these and let's have Laff running up against these.
Yeah, and I know there's one team in particular that you've been eyeing up all season to try and derail their promotion push, but we'll get onto that in just a little bit. Just in terms of yesterday, obviously we've gone over both goals, sorry. But just in terms of, performances that caught your eye, I think there's a few, as you mentioned, Clark, Ayling stood out for me yesterday. A lot of people mentioned O'Brien. It's a strange one because, as we said earlier in the podcast, and as the Swansea manager alluded to, I don't think it would be unfair for me to say I wasn't particularly impressed with our performance yesterday. And although there was a couple of all right performances, we weren't by any stretch really impressive. Yes, we've come away and we've done our job, and that's all you can ask. But as I say, it really is a strange position to be in. And at the risk of repeating myself again, you look at the likes of Luke Ayling and Sam Greenwood. And yesterday, just touching on those two for a moment, Nathan. I mean, Luke Ayling, I've seen on social media the past sort of few days, or especially the last 24 hours, that people are talking about Luke Ayling being part of a back five yesterday. Now, I don't know your take on this, but I certainly didn't look at our performance yesterday and think Luke Ayling was playing as a third centre half. I mean, it was nothing more than a solid performance at right back. And I think that's something that's gone a little bit under the radar, the fact we've almost transitioned back into that sort of more trusted 4-2-3-1 that Carrick likes to go with. Yes, okay, he's got a little bit of an added defensive sort of help there with Isaiah Jones because, as we've said, his sort of best position really is as a right wing back. But yeah, I've sort of gone off on a little tangent here. But yeah, yesterday, and even against Sheffield Wednesday, for the most part, it was more into a 4-2-3-1. And Ayling, for me, when he did have that little rough patch, it was when we were playing as a four. His best form has come along since we moved to that five. However, the last two home games, we've sort of slightly transitioned back away from that, I guess. And Luke Ayling has looked more convincing in that right back role. Sam Greenwood, again, just before I get your take on both, we spoke about this at half time yesterday. Sam Greenwood's come in for a little bit of stick. Obviously, he missed the penalty last week. I am going to come out with a statement that I'm not sure a lot of people will be too happy with. I think Middlesbrough will sign Sam Greenwood in the summer. And I think they'll snap him up for the 1.5 million that they've supposedly got the option to do. It just seems like through Carrick's sort of consistent use of him in that role, and I don't know if you've noticed this as well, he seems to get asked about Sam Greenwood an awful lot in the media, and he's always happy to talk about him and happy to sing his praises. And I just think, yes, Sam Greenwood is not a starter for a team that want to be trying to get into the automatic promotion places or even in the playoffs in the championship. But I look at some of his performances and I think I'm probably in the minority here. I think he's a good option. Yes, okay, he's a little bit greedy. He probably shoots too much. He can be a bit wasteful at times. But as an option, I look at his performance yesterday and there's certain parts of his game where I just think there's attributes there that can still be worked on. He's at a good age. As long as we aren't going to be paying him some sort of ridiculous wages, because I know his Leeds wages go up, as Kieran Scott said a while back now. But as a general squad player, I really wouldn't be against us signing Sam Greenwood.
Yeah, I think I'm on board with you there, Chris. I think as a squad option, yes, he's a good option for us. He can play pretty much anywhere across the front line. We've seen him play off the left as a centre forward as well. I was going to say as the number 10, which is probably his actual position, but we actually haven't seen him play there pretty much since his first appearance very early on in the season. But yeah, he's certainly got attributes that are favourable. His ball striking ability is really good. Obviously, his set pieces weren't great yesterday in terms of a few overhit corners. On Monday against Sheffield Wednesday, he whipped one in with a load of venom, and it comes off of Hickway's arse and goes in. Yeah, I think he could be a really interesting option. I think what I would be weighing up is if you look at our sort of squad of players without the loanees from this season, the players that will be here next season without signing any loanees, is Sam Greenwood better than the options that we've got off the left as a striker, are in the number 10 to what we will have going into next season? And I think there's certainly a couple of sort of arguments that you could have to make a case that yes, he could be better than maybe in certain games he could be more suited to playing than Josh Coburn could, or he could be more suited to playing than Finn Izaz could. So yeah, I think as an option, it'd be interesting to see if we take him on. I think that we might.
I
It will
just
depend on the
from,
wages.
yeah, that's obviously the big thing. But I just think from some of the comments, obviously, that we've heard from Kieran Scott, the fact that he's chased him throughout his career, tried to sign him at Norwich, I just feel like it's almost a signing that feels like, even though it's a loan, it might be one of those that's sort of already done and dusted. And I don't know what, that's nothing in terms of information. I just feel like that might be the case. And I don't know why. It's just a little hunch that I have. And yeah, it's an interesting one. Because as you say, other options in those sorts of positions, Finn Izaz, I think it would be fair to say that he hasn't quite sort of reached that level of performance yet that we were quite expecting when we signed him. And look, it's still relatively early days, but at the moment, if you said to me for the remainder of the season, you can only pick from Finn Izaz or Sam Greenwood in the 10 role, I don't think I would convincingly say, oh yeah, it's got to be Izaz. And I think that's, I mean, it's not huge praise for Sam Greenwood. But I don't know. I think just those attributes are something that I'd be willing to take a chance on, I guess, as a permanent signing. And I don't think it's ever really been a case of Sam Greenwood has performed excellently in his general play. I don't really think he's that type of player, but I just feel like in terms of a 4 to 5 goal a season player, it's going to be an option. He's probably not going to start loads of games, but he can play in and around that forward line. I wouldn't be furious if we took a risk on him. On the Luke Ayling situation as well, I mean, he continues to sort of win over the hearts of Borough fans just because he's just a little bit of a shithouse, isn't he? And he loves celebrating. He really gives it his everything when celebrating, especially with Lattie Laugh, I've noticed. But another solid performance from him yesterday. And you sort of think we're in a situation where, again, as we spoke about last weekend, we've got two right backs who are of an age where they are getting on a little bit, but I still think he's got something to offer. Maybe he's not as the first choice right back, but it's just a little bit of a, I don't know, maybe I'm not gonna lie, I feel like I may be blindsided a little bit by this unbeaten run, but I don't know. I'm looking at players in a different way now and thinking, oh, is it worth the money? Is it worth a little gamble? Could
Well,
we add to what we already have and that will work? Or am I just being a little bit too nice with people?
I think in terms of right backs, I think we may have discussed it a couple of weeks ago, so apologies if we did. But with right backs, obviously there's three at the football club: Ayling, Tommy Smith, who's been out injured all season and still has a year left on his deal heading into next season, and Anthony Dyke's deal. Now, I think if you were to order those in terms of who's the best right back, I think I've just given you the order there in terms of how Michael Carrick will see it as well, in terms of probably Ayling and Smith are ahead of Dyke's deal in terms of what they offer at right back, in terms of their reliability, and in terms of what Michael Carrick wants in there. We all thought that Dyke-Steele possibly could do a job, especially with us last season having the right back sort of invert to let the left back bomb on. With his pace, he could get you out of jail, but he's just too unreliable. Michael Carrick doesn't fancy him, evidently. And I'd be very surprised if he's at the football club heading into next season, if I'm honest. But then you have, as mentioned, two right backs. If you take up the option to sign Ayling, you have two right backs there that are on the older side of a player. But you have Ayling and his ability to play multiple positions. I think he could do you a job at centre half in a three. He could even do a job in a two, really, with his size and his ability in the air, and obviously his ability in the tackle as well. And it'll be very, very, very interesting to see what state Tommy Smith is in when he's back from this injury, because
It's been that kind of an injury where, at his age, it's likely going to have quite the effect on him. And, you know, Tommy Smith was never really a player that relied on pace as such, but still, you know, he's getting to that age where the old, I think his legs might be going, shouts are nearing. And with an injury where he's been out for so long, you do look at that situation again and think, you know, how, well, as you say, how's that going to affect him? I think, as you say, Anthony Dyke-Steele's time at the club is up now. And it's a shame because we saw periods and certain performances where you think, I'm sure there's a player in there somewhere, but it's just a case of he's become unreliable. You think of every chance that he's got really under Michael Carrick, and he's let Carrick down. He's had a number of sendings off. He's been caught out for goals or just, you know, switched off in moments. And unfortunately, I think, as you say, it will be the end of Anthony Dyke-Steele's Middlesbrough career going into the summer, approaching next season. But yeah, it's certainly one where now you almost judge every single performance as though you're thinking, right, well, he's done all right there. He's still got a chance. Or is that performance enough for the coaching staff to say, yeah, we're going to move on from that now. It is that sort of territory of the season. But as you alluded to earlier, Nathan, we've got some big games coming up, big for a variety of reasons. I guess because of the fact that we are now in the territory of, if we beat some of the teams that we're about to play against, it could completely derail their whole season. And you've been looking forward to it. A lot of Middlesbrough fans have been looking forward to it. And we're finally here. So, in order, Hull, Ipswich, Leeds. How do they all pan out, Nathan?
Well, I don't really know how they're going to pan out, if I'm honest. We'll have to wait and see on that front. But if I'm totally honest, the onus is on all three of them to come and bring the game to us. For me, there's no pressure going into these games. I know it's really bad, don't have anything in terms of a prize to play for, apart from the prize of just spite, really, in beating these teams that have things to play for. And nothing would make me happier, as you all know, that listen to this podcast, that yeah, I'm a very spiteful football fan, and nothing would make me happier than ruining team seasons after, first of all, today, recording on the 7th of April, we got the notification this morning on Twitter that it was a year since Burnley celebrated promotion at the Riverside. Obviously, Coventry celebrated two promotions at the Riverside at the back end of last season, and yet still found themselves in the Championship. And yeah, quite frankly, I'm sick of it. Teams celebrating big results against us. So, yeah, just let's have it. Hull up first on Wednesday night. They went to Cardiff at the weekend, got a really positive result, won 3-1 away from home. Obviously, we spoke a little bit in January, February time, when we were talking about our own January transfer window, about Hull's and the way that they'd gone about things, which was just, oh, he's a load of money. Hopefully we make the playoffs. And I mean, I don't know about their financial situation, nor do I care, but surely they'll be teetering on the end if this doesn't pay off. In terms of them reaching the playoffs with the amount of loan fees and wages that they must be covering. But yeah, some faces in their team that we know, obviously Greaves being linked with constantly under Wilder, and it turns out that he's actually a pretty good centre half. So heads up for the recruitment team on that one again. Obviously Gilo at left back. Obviously, me and you have a very soft spot for him after last season, and it's a shame that he's gone there, because I'd like nothing more than to see him despairing on the turf at the end of the game. But yeah, some really good attacking players as well in Carvalho, and obviously we didn't see him in the last game because he was injured. But Philogene as well, really exciting attacking players that can hurt you at the top of the pitch. And yeah, it'll be a really difficult game to go there and get anything, I suppose. But yeah, let's have it. We'll see what that brings on Wednesday night. Still, I think I've still got a couple of questions on Rossini as a manager, but yeah.
Yeah, just on that, I mean, you've mentioned it. How on earth is he in the running for manager of the season?
Yeah,
I
I mean,
know, totally going. I mean, I guess it kind of relates to the topic because we're about to play Hull, but with the money that they spent, I think Kieran Scott, without saying so, pretty much said that they literally blew people out the water in January with wages that were up on offer and contributions to wages, obviously, because they made quite a lot of high profile loan signings. But for me, if I'm a Hull fan, and to be honest, I have seen a few question marks thrown at him because, you know, I think that Sky Sports or the EFL in general are trying to sort of paint this like underdog story about Hull when you look at their, if everyone's fit, you look at their team and that there's no way that that shouldn't be finishing inside of the playoffs. I mean, when you think of some, you could genuinely make a case that the likes of Leeds, the likes of Leicester would have happily made some of the signings which Hull did in January. So, yeah, a strange one all around with that. But yeah, I mean, the theme this season really has been that we've performed better against the better teams. And Obviously, as I said earlier, we've sort of transitioned a little bit away from the back five, but I think we are more than likely going to see that back in full function in the next three games. Raf van den Berg will probably come back into the team. I think you're likely to see either Dan Barlasser or Lewis O'Brien drop out and Housen will go back into midfield, perhaps. It will be an interesting one. I think, as you say there, with Hull, it's really, they can't afford to lose if they have any aspirations of making a late crash into the playoffs. I don't think they will make it, as you say. I think that's signed and sealed and delivered now. The only other team I could see potentially upsetting Norwich's run of form is Coventry. And in all honesty, I think Wembley will probably end up being the deciding factor on how they do, because you think now, if they get any sort of positive result against Man United, that's going to weigh heavy on the minds and the legs of the players on that Wembley pitch and probably going to be a big distraction as it gets closer. So, yeah, I mean, the other two fixtures are a little bit bigger, just in the case of Hull don't stand a huge chance of getting promoted, whereas Leeds and Ipswich are pretty much in a straight shootout now as to who goes up. You earlier on in the season thought that the wheels of the Ipswich tractor would fall off. And in fairness to them, Nathan, they've stuck at it, they've scored late goals. And we're going into the final weeks of the season, and they're still in and amongst it. I'm guessing you'd love nothing more than going to Ipswich and putting up a performance like Arsenal did at the Etihad, where there's not really any intention of winning. There's just a full intention of being party poopers and defending in a disgusting manner with several buses parked in the opposition box.
Well, first of all, yeah, I did think that they would have fallen off at the minute, but yeah, they've been incredible the way that they've gone on, and the consistency that I was going to say the top four. I'm going to disclude Southampton from it now, the way that they've sort of, I think there's something like a 12-point gap now between Southampton and the rest,
Yeah, they've
so
fell off a cliff, haven't they, Southampton?
they've fallen off a cliff, yeah. But the way that the top three have been so consistently good in terms of performance and results all season has been nothing short of magnificent. But obviously, the main advantage that that Leicester and Leeds have is parachute payments and retaining players that, I'm going to be honest, shouldn't really be playing at the level, really. Yeah, they've done remarkably well to be where they are. Their home form's nothing short of magnificent. As much as there's been Championship fans, including myself, that will say that a lot of the late goals have been down to luck. It's not luck. As we know, when we went up years ago, we scored loads of late goals back to back in games, and it wasn't luck. It was just not taking no for an answer in terms of just banging down the door and making sure that you get those 3 points. But it's crunch time now with 5 games to go in the Championship. And it's bedwetting time for the top three. Going to Portman Road, do I expect anything? No. But stranger things have happened in this division. It throws up all sorts of bullshit at this year, at this stage of the season. And yeah, as you mentioned about Arsenal going to the Etihad the other week, I'm not going to liken Portman Road to the Etihad, if I'm honest. But what I will say is they went there to defend with all their might for a point. Nothing made me happier than a Laiolath goal on the break at Portman Road, Chris. And a sneaky horrible, disgusting shithouse 1-0 away at Portman Road with McKenna versus Carrick once again. Look, it is a strange thing how it's happened. Look, they had a fully fit squad in the last game. We thought that it was going to be a top game. Always thought it was going to be a top game from the minute the fixtures were announced, with it being Carrick versus McKenna. I'm so shocked that Sky Sports aren't lapping it up for the second time this season. But once again, they'll be at full complement. We won't be at full complement once again. But Raven Hackney back, massively important. Really nice to have those boys back. But yeah, we're still missing bodies as well, which is a real shame. But yeah, let's just see what we can do. But stranger things have happened, and it'd be really nice to go there and yeah, just serve up the most anti-football, horrible defend for your life's attack on the break performance ever. We'll just win the last five and see where it takes us.
That would be such a Middlesbrough thing to do, wouldn't it? Go five. Well, what would that take us to? What, we're on
12.
12 unbeaten, 5 wins to end the season on. We'd still miss out on the playoffs, wouldn't we? I mean,
Collect
really.
32 points out of a possible 36.
Yeah, it would be so Borough, wouldn't it? It really, really would. And I mean, even for me now, as we've said, really, it's just a case of continuing this run of form as long as possible until it's mathematically impossible that we can make the playoffs. And whilst there's still a chance, whether it be 2% or whatever Sky Sports said it was the other day, or even 1%, then at least there's still a chance. There's still a chance. There's still something to play for. There's that tiny, tiny little seed in the back of every Middlesbrough fan's mind that someone might slip up and we can pounce. Obviously, everyone was hoping that would be the case yesterday, and it wasn't. But we won again. And quite frankly, after Stoke away, I thought we were going to be going in at the last day of the season in a relegation battle. So everything is a win after that point.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice to be in this situation in terms of looking back a month ago and the panic that was ensuing on this podcast, having not won for a long time. And now, since then, it was almost Carrick. He might as well come out in this press conference and say, "What were you all worried about? Just chill out. There's
I'd
no
almost re
panic."
I'd almost respect if he did. He's that much of a sort of smooth operator, like cool character. I would just love if he said his final interview of the season, if he just said, "Honestly, you lot, remember when we got beat at the Bet365, and you all actually thought that, we might potentially get relegated?" I mean, it really is remarkable. It's been. I don't think it'll have a big sort of crescendo ending in a big moment to end the season off, but what a season of ups and downs in general. I mean, at certain points, we have absolutely stunk the season out, stunk the league out, sorry, I should say. And then at other points, we've been, well, as you say, we currently sit top of the form table. So just
It's
what a
incredible.
strange, strange team, a strange season. And one that, I mean, we'll obviously reflect on it as we get to the end of the season and the games are done, but one I'll reflect on and just think, well, that was just a bit strange. The whole thing was just weird.
Yeah, it has been. And you look at, I mean, even now, I mean, I know we've played a game extra, but you'd say that Hull have played particularly well over the whole season, and we're sat above them in the table, and we've been, well, crap for large majorities of the season, really. Yeah, we find ourselves sat in eighth place, just motoring along, doing as we do, top of the form table, on promotion form, really, just motoring along.
It's just, and do you know what? I think it's close to wrapping up territory now because I feel like every podcast from now until the end of the season is just going to be us over and over again saying how strange it is that we keep winning games, but it's not really affecting anything. We would currently be sat level on points with Norwich if we'd have just beaten Rotherham twice. I mean, if that doesn't sum up this season, I don't know what does. They've already been relegated. Jordan Hugel's finally sliding down the EFL pyramid. I mean, the football world's eventually figured out that he's actually just not a very good striker, and they've gone. I mean, it's one less bogey team, but yeah, that to summarize this season, we would currently be sat in the playoffs if we hadn't have bottled the Norwich games, dear me, the Rotherham games twice.
Yeah, as you said, Norwich there, we took 6 points off them as well.
And
Just
of course, probably the inevitable champions of the division, who for large parts of the season have been described as one of the best championship teams ever. We also took 6 points off them. So, yeah.
we did, but we have three teams on the bounce now where we've taken no points from any of them. So let's make a change, Borough. Get a couple. Couple will do. Maybe. Four, five, six, nine.
I mean, that would be getting into real. If honestly, I don't think I could bring myself to even do the podcast if we finish this season on a 12 game long unbeaten run and we have nothing to show for it at the end of the season. I don't think honestly I could take that. It would just be, well, it would just feel like a little bit of a waste of time, but we'll have enjoyed the journey. Yeah, I think, as I say, we're into wrapping up territory now. We've gone on the ups and downs, or rather the ups of this little run of games. We continue to ride the wave and we'll just see where it takes us, Nathan. As we say, let's hope to ruin some promotion parties. Let's hope to ruin some seasons. And let's start by ruining Hull season because they still Ryan Giles off us. That has been another episode of the Broplist podcast. I do hope you've enjoyed. Nathan, thank you very much for your time. If you've watched on YouTube, please do like and subscribe. Audio platforms, of course, as always, please do rate and review. And that has been another reasonably upbeat episode of the Broplist podcast.